Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
July 1st has been officially canceled, and that's okay with us because this is draft week in Buffalo and everything continues to happen, and who knows what will still be left to unfold on night one of the draft, Friday night here at KeyBank Center. We're in our Sabres Live studio with Marty. I'm Brian. I'm going to warn you now, I have opinions and I'm fully ready to use them unless you go on a big tangent here and just dominate the show. By the way, Chris Peters comes in from Flow Hockey to talk draft a little bit later in the show.
I have opinions too. I'm just wondering if they'll make a difference and if people agree with my opinions, because I'm just very confused with some of the things that have happened. Although I want to just say I hope everybody had a great weekend. I hope all the dads had a great, Father's Day yesterday. Yes, it's not dazzled or disturbed time yet, but I got a panic phone call from my daughter on Friday night that her dog had got in a fight with a porcupine that had about 30 quills in his mouth and nose area, and she had to go to the vet. So that was like how my Father's Day almost started.
So that dog is named Knox.
Yes, Knox.
Who feels worse today, Knox or Steve Staios?
I think Steve Staios. Yeah. And Knox, the quills were right around his mouth, and he got tranquilized, and they got pulled out at the vet. I think Steve Staios feels like he got a kick in the below the belt part, and that may not recover until that team starts up next year.
Unbelievable.
And if they don't win, it may not recover for years. So, yes, Brady Tkachuk gets traded from the Ottawa Senators to the Florida Panthers, and all that, and I'm going to say all that, the Ottawa Senators are getting back. Look, there's still work that can be done. Is two first-round picks this year, a second next year, and a first-round pick in 2029. Yes, all the 13- and 14-year-olds hockey player out there, you could be that 2029 first-rounder drafted by the Ottawa Senators. That's in 4 years. In 3 years. That's crazy.
It is crazy, and obviously it was out of necessity because Florida didn't have some of their other picks, and you know they were able to punt another one down the road with lottery protection, incredibly. But that's for another time. The story is Brady Tkachuk leaving Ottawa and going to Florida. Need we remind you, the Atlantic was already the best division in hockey. I crunched the numbers again, folks, just to make sure that we knew this. Like, the Atlantic was well ahead of the Central and the Metro, and the Pacific was an afterthought in last year's standings. We knew the Panthers would be better, and now they have Brady Tkachuk, and they might still add a superstar goaltender into the mix.
After
years of Bobrovsky, they could still fit in Connor Hellebuck. What does this mean for the Sabres at a time when the Maple Leafs, which we're going to get to, added Darren Radish and continue to retool? Like, seriously, how good is this division? How hard is it going to be for Buffalo into next year?
Well, we already knew Florida was going to go up this year. They were going to get Barkov back, who missed the season and, you know, got to play at the World Championship with Consa Hellenius, and Barkov looked good. So getting Barkov back was going to be a step forward for the Florida Panthers. And it's not just getting one player back. It's the captain. It's the, you know, the fact that you're as a team looking around and say, hey, we have all of our guys. Now, yes, they're missing who's going to stop the puck right now. And I think that Bill Zito and the Florida Panthers are saying, we'll figure that out. You know, they trade Semishkevich. They get a first-round pick in return. They use that first-round pick to be able to acquire Brady Tkachuk. So they lost a piece of the defense as well. But you're getting Brady Tkachuk. You're getting a massive piece. Now, do I think Brady Tkachuk is this superstar player that everybody talks about? No, I think that Brady Tkachuk has still some limitations. But he hits. He plays hard. He may get over the line at times, and he won't have to be a first-line player with the Florida Panthers. He could be a second-line player playing with his brother and maybe playing with Sam Bennett or whatever, and then let's go. You guys go out there and bang up whatever other lines they put on the ice. Like, that's what is going to happen. So we knew Florida was going to go up. Now I've got Florida going all the way up to the top of the Atlantic, but possibly the top of the conference, depending on what they do with their goaltending.
What do you think they're going to do with their goaltending? Do you think it's Bob, or do you think they will actually land Hellebuck?
I don't think they'll get Connor Hellebuck.
Okay.
I think that the Winnipeg Jets should be smart in what they're going to do if they do something with Connor Hellebuyck. And right now, the Florida Panthers don't have a first-round pick in 2026 and 2027 and 2028 and 2029. They don't have a first-round pick until 2030.
And they don't want to part with Anton Lundell.
And, yeah, so you would have to really give up something big, in my opinion. You look at the odds of winning the Atlantic. The Florida Panthers went all the way up, which I don't understand why the Ottawa Senators are still third in the odds.
Is it too early in the week to say that's a joke?
That's a joke.
The Sabres have to be better odds than the Senators. They have to be.
They'd have to be. I think that the Lightning are also, and we'll talk about that, losing Darren Radish. I think the Lightning should be taking a step back. For me, it would be Florida, Montreal, Buffalo, the top three teams to win the Atlantic. That would
be my
odds.
Leafs likely, possibly.
With the Leafs right behind them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Toronto and Buffalo there are the same at 850.
Yeah.
Not much variance between the Habs, the Leafs, and the Sabres, which I think is accurate. Obviously, history, you know, is kind to the Lightning based on continued regular season success and now almost long ago Cup wins. Like, it's amazing how quickly this happens, right? This is a almost completely different era for the Lightning from when they won based on everything that has unfolded in the division and across the league. But, like,
they go to three straight Stanley Cup finals. They win two, lose one.
Then the Panthers
went to three straight. They won two, lose one. I'm asking you, and I was driving today, I'm thinking,
and Carolina's been the best team over the last 8 years, despite that.
And they finally won. But now I'm like, okay, how quick things turned. Like, if Tampa doesn't make the playoff next year or doesn't compete for a cup, that will be many years. Now you're talking about, we got to start over again. And if Florida, with all that they're doing, doesn't get in that conversation, did they miss on their recovery attempt after winning back-to-back and then missing the playoffs? Carolina, there's still some work to be done. Although Carolina
and Florida on paper look almost identical because they've got like at least 14 of their players, both of them, basically committed for 4 to 5 years.
Yes.
Because, and I include Brady Tkachuk in that group for Florida because now
he'll
that he's
resign.
There, he's never leaving. So it doesn't matter about
he's
the
got
2 years.
And then it's, you know, he'll be, okay, I'll stay here in Florida. I just made
unless
my
unless the Blues are cup contenders by then and he goes back to, you know.
It would have to be with Matthew. It would have to both of them be like, we're going to St. Louis. They're not going to go anywhere together. Like, if they're not together.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking at Florida, Montreal and Buffalo, Toronto, to me, that's your top four. And you know what? Like, there was two of those teams that were at the bottom of the division last year that are going to go from last to first or second last to top four. That's the way I look at it. I put Buffalo in there still. I think Carolina, you mentioned, you know, for the Eastern Conference, Carolina still has to figure out, okay, like, how do we go into with our goaltending? Is it Kochetkov and Brendan Bussey most likely? How does that look? But you asked about Florida, Bobrovsky or Hellebuyck or whatnot. You know who found Brendan Bussey? It was the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. They lost him on waivers to Carolina, but Florida has that goalie department headed by Roberto Luongo. Francois Allaire is in there. Luongo's brother is in there. Mm-hmm. Robbie Tallis has been the goalie coach for a while there. They have a goalie department that basically goes in and finds. They had Samuel Montembeau there. What he turned out to be? A number one goalie. They had Devon Levi. He ended up being Sam Reinhart. They had Spencer Knight. Mm-hmm. They turn around. They make that Seth Jones. They have had goalies, and they found goalies anywhere they're able to find a goalie. They just haven't gone to the moon or Mars to find a goalie yet.
In defense of the rest of the league, we all could have seen Bussey's numbers with Providence in the Boston organization. It wasn't like he was a flash in the pan. He was more than capable, and that's where they focused their attention. And ironically, it didn't turn out for them. It turned out for Carolina. But Bussey was certainly trending towards getting a shot at the NHL level. Who knew it could have turned out this way? Let's try to roll through this as quick as possible and how it impacts the Sabres, because when you have a weekend that had so many names in play and so many signings and a great weekend for the 30-plus crowd, Alex Tuch is in that category.
Yes.
And I wasn't willing to surrender on revisiting or staying with the idea of Tuch remaining a Sabre last week, despite some on this show suggesting otherwise.
Me.
Darren Dreger continues to suggest that the Sabres will circle back on Tuch to potentially work out a deal. I think this is, in part, because of how the rest of the league is starting to unfold and dominoes are falling. But how do you view this at a time when also Kevin Weeks talked about Zach Benson being close on a new deal, which we obviously would have expected because Jarmo Kekäläinen made him a high priority in his end of season address?
So obviously with all that has happened over the last 3 days, I think if you're Alex Tuch and the Buffalo Sabres, you're going to recircle back because some of the teams, maybe Alex Tuch was talking to Florida. And now they say, well, you know, Florida's not an option because we got Brady Tkachuk. And maybe Alex Tuch was talking with the Edmonton Oilers. And then you're like, oh, well, we know what? We just re-signed Jason Dickinson. We just re-signed Connor Murphy. Maybe we don't have the money.
Seattle gave a boatload to McMahon.
To Bobby McMahon.
Seattle's been and could still do it, but Seattle's been talked about with Tuch
as
well.
Maybe they're like, yeah, you know what? We gave one of our own the money now because we made a deal for him, and that's the way it is. I think that's where you circle back. And I think that's where we may get some insiders like Darren Dreger and others talking about, hey, you know what? There's been more conversation this week than any other week with Tuch and the Sabres and Jarmo Kekäläinen because of the ever-changing marketplace right now. So this will be interesting. Do I think the Sabres can do Alex Tuch right now? I don't think they can because the Kevin Weeks report was Zach Benson 7x7.
But you always remind people you can go over it in the summer.
You can go up to $10 million over because that's 10%.
Which I think allows them to get multiple things done. Tuch, and then work on finding a home for potentially other larger money guys, but not huge money guys, like, let's say, a Greenway, a McLeod, whoever. It could be anything, but the Sabres would obviously have to move money.
Yeah, correct, I see what you're saying, yeah. But I would like those dominoes to be done first and then be able to come in and backfill.
Yeah, I think the point is that it doesn't have to be done a certain way. It
doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a July 1 deadline for Alex Tuch, so that would be one that maybe happens. I always felt like Benson was one because of the, you know,
if they get Benson at 7x7, you're thrilled, right?
I'm thrilled, yes. I think that maybe 6.5 to 6.75 was the number I'd be willing to go, but 7 years, or even if you say, hey, let's go 8 years at 7 or whatnot, right? Like, there's definitely, for me, the allocated cap space that's somewhere between 6.5 to 7 million over a long term. Benson, you've seen it, the season that he's had, being able to play in a lot of different roles, but the playoffs that he had as well, being that leading force, right? Mm-hmm. When the team wasn't really going well, especially against Montreal, you put Norris and Benson with Thompson and then Allison. Too bad it happened in Game 6. Maybe if it happened a little earlier in the series, that would have changed the series. But Benson was the leading force. And I think the number is perfect for Zach Benson. But then, yeah, Alex Tuch, maybe you're 10.5 to almost 11 million. You're seeing, you know, Bobby McMahon get about $500,000 more than what was, predicted. Mm-hmm. You get Connor Murphy getting $500,000 more than what was predicted. Like, everybody's getting either term or money more than what was predicted. But when you get closer to July 1, that may change. You don't know what the market will do on July 1.
Well, what's happening to the market is it's even the list of free agents is getting even shorter and shorter and shorter, which few could have thought possible based on how short it was to begin with when the regular season ended. Anyway, we will eventually get to July 1st. The question is, will at that point in time Ryan Shea be the headliner as far as most money? Look, Ryan's 150 games into his career. He had a great year with Pittsburgh. I think he's going to get overpaid. But if that's your TSN lead story,
who else is in between Ryan Shea and Alex Tuch right now? Like, there's
Anthony Mantha is an interesting one.
Because there's people driving around and they're like, but is Ryan Shea the second best free agent available on July 1? No, there's other players.
This may be the busiest Monday in Sabres live memory for me in a non-free agent window, because the weekend started on Friday with the Leafs acquiring Darren Radish's rights from Tampa to immediately give him 8 years, $8.5 million, to bring him home on the heels of a career year.
There's a couple of layers to that. Number one, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning saying, we'll accept a fifth round pick for you to sign Darren Radish.
It's that or nothing.
I think they could have asked for a little bit
more. If the world knew that Radish was going to sign in Toronto, what other team was going to pony up a fourth, a third, or a second to get his rights?
For Tampa, they probably could have asked Toronto a little bit more. Look at what Vegas got for the rights of Mitch Marner, that sign and trade. And I think maybe that was league-driven because there may have been some tampering situation. They're like, listen,
give something. There was also a player involved in
that. It was Nick Waugh.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, Vegas gave Toronto much more. I think that Toronto didn't give anything to Tampa. A fifth rounder is nothing. Right. So that's that. Now, Darren Radish, again, here's another player signing about $500,000 more than what the projections were when you look at AFP analytics. You know, $8 million was the sweet spot for Darren Radish on a long-term deal. He goes out and gets $8.5 million. He's 30 years old, gets an eight-year deal at $8.5 million. It's a lot of money. But when
it's
you look
at money,
Toronto,
it's too much term.
It's too much term, too. You're right. It's a lot of money for a player that had one really standout year. It was there because Victor Hedman was not the top power play guy, was injured and had a leave of absence. But I look at Toronto and I think that if there was a player that could maybe move the needle for you, and especially when you consider your power play, your Austin Matthews angle of it, it's Darren Radish. Why? Because Radish is a right-hand shot. Mm-hmm. And now you can play the one-timer game with Matthews going back and forth. And then all of a sudden, Jim Miller comes into the picture. He was the power play guy with Matthews early in his career. So I'm like, okay, maybe that makes sense. And now again, I think that Toronto moves up from a 78-point season last year, last in the Atlantic. I think they're going over 90 this year.
Easily.
Maybe 98, maybe close to 100, which moves them in the top four of the division, in my opinion.
Well, as far as, you know, and will the Leafs move off of Morgan Rielly still? That's, you know, another talking point for a team that has already made significant change this offseason. Seattle has been desperate under Jason Botterill to make change. They acquired Bobby McMahon from Toronto last year. He lit it up in the end of the regular season, which was a non-playoff year for the Kraken, but now he stays. He's also 30 and gets a six-year deal at 5.75. This team also, the Kraken, acquired former first-rounder Mackie Samuskevich, so he's a Beniers buddy. He's supposed to help up front. The team needs more offense. Seattle still needs a lot, in my opinion, but
And then
the other thing is like, again, as we talk trades here and the draft coming up Friday and Saturday here in Buffalo, like, does Shane Wright move this week? Because that's another big piece with the Kraken. Do they preach patience after an enormous drop point-wise last year for Wright compared to his breakout year the year before?
Yeah, this is a tricky situation with Shane Wright. I think that when he plays and when he's given that opportunity, maybe in the top six, he plays well. And then sometimes in the third line, it's tricky. But I think there's still some teams that may look at him and saying, hey, you know what? That's a good player. We have a spot for him, and we're going to work on that. That's good. Bobby McMahon, it's all about the impression you make with your new team, right? You get traded there. Bobby McMahon had 14 points in 18 games, and 10 of those points were goals.
Okay.
He had 10 goals in 18 games with Seattle to finish the season.
But
great finish.
Garbage time also.
Garbage time, but that's the impression you left. Mm-hmm. Now they're saying, hey, could Bobby McMahon, like, he did have 29 goals last year. Could he be 30, 35 goals for maybe three or four of those years? If that's the case, absolutely worth it. But I felt like that was, again, just you made the trade, and now you're scrambling to say, there's not a lot of players that maybe we could get in Seattle, so we got to re-sign the players that we have.
Hurricanes had $150,000 out for their Stanley Cup celebration. They gave Nick Deslauriers a two-year contract extension. Incredible, $875 per. Jason Dickinson re-ups with the Oilers. It's a long one, 5 years, $4 million per. They also get Connor Murphy wrapped up as well. He was also an in-season acquisition last year. He's back on their blue line for 5 years at 4.1. And Phil Housley is back in the news as he, unsurprisingly, has joined Peter Laviolette once again as an assistant in LA.
Housley was an assistant with Laviolette with the Nashville Predators. Then he took the head coaching job in Buffalo, rejoined Peter Laviolette as an assistant with the Rangers, and now moves on to LA. Look, Laviolette has a system, and it's basically we chase in the defensive zone a little bit like Carolina and Montreal have done, but that's Laviolette and Housley. We saw what Housley tried to do that here. It didn't work. He didn't have the team for that. It will be very interesting to me. The LA Kings going from a strict 1-3-1 and a strict defensive zone coverage to Laviolette and Housley style. they're going to be running around. It may not work the way that, you know, Luke Robitaille and the Kings think it's going to work.
All the more reason to wonder what else LA is going to do to perhaps change the look of their team, be it up front or more specifically on the blue line, where it wasn't robust last year. And certainly you've got an aging Doughty, and, you know, will he end up re-upping with them? Who knows?
Quinn Byfield as your potential number one center?
Yep. Well, Panarin full year. We'll see how it goes. Now, Housley, of course, is a Hall of Famer, and we're about to learn of more Hall of Famers for the class of 2026. When you look at a short list of, from an NHL perspective, obviously there could be four players, two from the women's game. We could see upwards of two builders be announced today. Who do you think should be called by the Hall today?
Well, I think it's interesting because for me, Patrice Bergeron is in. Like, I mean, the Boston Bruins are going to do a jersey retirement this year. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. That's in. I think Carey Price gets in. He was looked over last year in his first year of being eligible. I think Carey Price gets in. Now it gets to be a little bit tricky because for me, are you looking at Rod Brind'Amour? And Rod Brind'Amour as a player himself could have had the numbers to be like considered a Hall of Fame. But what he's accomplished as a coach now, and also people say you can't, if you go in as a player, you can't look at what you've done as a coach, but it can influence the way you see the person. You can't just put him in as a builder. He's still coaching. So I think Rod Brind'Amour is going to get in. So that's three. And that leaves you one more. Is this the year maybe that emotionally Claude Lemieux gets in? Like people have talked about his playoff stats and the fact that he passed away just last month. Like, is this the year that maybe emotionally a Claude Lemieux gets in as well? A Theo Fleury maybe? There's a lot of really good candidates. But I think Bergeron, Price, and Rod Brind'Amour for me would be the top three.
I was not thinking Price at this juncture. So you're clearly not pushing for Ryan Miller.
I don't think Ryan Miller, to me, would be a
Hall of Famer. That's why I wouldn't think
fame.
Carey Price is either. But anyway, I would say this. It is being dubbed like a potential Hall of Good, you know, as opposed to Hall of Great.
Well, Bergeron is your headliner, and he's great.
Yeah. I don't know. I hate even talking about it because of Claude's passing, but we have been saying for a long time Claude Lemieux should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Regardless, based on his incredible... fierce playoff nature and success. Sabres, of course, hosted.
Quickly, Duffer, to your point of all of good, the NHL Network put out a list of first-year eligible players, okay? On that list were Bergeron, Kessel, Eric Staal, Derek Brassard, and David Krejci. Like, you don't have to include Derek Brassard and David Krejci on your list. You can just leave it at two or three
guys. If Mayday was sitting here with us in studio, he would have Krejci in on his first ballot, for sure. No question. I've never seen Brad more excited about another player in my time working with him.
Oh,
Sabres
good.
Hosting the 2026 NHL Draft this week. There's FanFest in Ticketmaster Alumni Plaza on both June 26th and June 27th, so Friday and Saturday. Music, hockey games, prospect red carpet, and more. Visit sabres.com/draft to learn more, and we'll talk about the prospects with Chris Peters coming up.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Building is buzzing already this week as it's getting set to host the draft, and we want you in your seats here for the Sabres 26-27 season with a 10-game plan. You can enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, and then I would encourage you to make sure you get Florida in the rest of the nine other games if you can. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. The representative of the PHWA from Iowa, Chris Peters, is with us. This is, man, we needed to do a better rollout to the draft than have representatives from every single state when it comes to hockey writers. But there is better from the state of Iowa than Chris Peters, a repeat guest on this show. Welcome back, Chris. How are you?
After an intro like that, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Happy to represent the state of Iowa, originally from Illinois. Now in Iowa by choice, I think that we're ready to roll. It's very easy to get from Iowa to everywhere. So we've been all over the map. We're ready to roll.
Well, I'll tell you this. For all the hockey parents and hockey grandparents and aunts and uncles and everything, I love the hat that you're sporting right now with Flow Hockey, Flow Sports, because we get to watch a lot of junior hockey, a lot of college hockey on those platforms.
Amerks
and AHL and all of it, yes. So we have Duffer has it on one computer. I have it on another computer. I have to have multiple accounts because, the amount of screens you can have.
They've added
so, yes.
Canadian box lacrosse this summer. I'm still watching it on a nightly basis. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, honestly, so one, thanks for the plug. Two, this is the one thing I'm worried about with Flow is that it's going to make my job obsolete because you can just scout the players yourself now. Like, you don't even have, you don't need me anymore. You can watch the OHL, the Q, the USHL, you can watch Atlantic Hockey, you can watch all sorts of, the AHL and the ECHL, obviously, too. I mean, we just finished up with the Calder Cup final the other day. So we basically have hockey from, essentially September to June, and you're pretty much set. So yeah, get on that. I don't know, you don't need to listen to me anymore. You can just watch the players yourself.
We want to, and we want to know how many times you have redone your round one mock draft based on all the picks that have moved already, what you believe to be certain teams' needs and desires and targets. But let's start specifically because of the Kesselring trade last week by the Sabres with San Jose that moves them from 27 up to 20 if they hang on to this pick. Now, who should the Sabres, in your opinion, be looking at there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this draft, and we talked about it all year, is that, there's a lot of uncertainty about, and this is really every draft, especially when you get to the 20s, where you're not entirely sure what's exactly going to be there. And I think this year is no different than that. You look at you talk to teams about their lists or about what they're doing and what their plans are, what their needs are, and all those different things. And, I think that this is a year where there's just a lot of variance in opinions on specific players, and some teams love a guy, some teams don't really think much of him at all. That's the same as every year. And so when you're in the range of 20, that's the kind of players that we're talking about. You're just hoping really to find a guy that can be a difference maker. More times than not anymore, the first round is still a place where you can find somebody that's going to be a significant prospect in your system. And once you're in the top 20, that's usually a pretty good place to be. And I think this year it is a good place to be. I think where the Sabres are, there's plenty of value to be had there. And so there's a number of names that I think are reasonable to expect will be available. And there's some that are more likely and less likely. So I'm going to start with the less likely guys and kind of work my way backwards, because I think, one guy that has kind of gotten buzz in the teens is Adam Novotny. So Novotny is a guy that has a real talent for scoring, but he's also a good two-way winger. He's got size. He's got strength. He came over to the OHL this year, played in Peterborough, and really, you'll see the shot that he has, tremendous there, but he plays like a man already, and I think that's really important to see a player that knows what he can do and what he can be on the ice. We've seen him at the World Juniors as well, been a very strong player there for them. So, I think that's a guy to at least look at, because there are some teams that aren't necessarily sold on the offensive upside of the player, and that might allow a player like that to drop down a little bit. Another guy that I look at in this range, too, that is one of my favorites in the draft, but I know he's got a wide range of opinions among scouts, and that's Maddox Dagenais, who plays for the Quebec Remparts. And he is 6'4", highly skilled, great shot, and you say, that guy goes top 15 all day. Well, he's got a little bit of consistency issues, and that's been kind of one of the things. And that his compete, when his motor is running, he is really difficult to play against. If it's not, he can disappear into the background of games. So you want a player that has that size-skill combo. To me, that's the rarer commodity. The fact that he does have this tremendous hand skill to him, that he's able to make a lot of plays and do a lot of things on the ice in his frame. He is listed as a center. A lot of teams do view him as a winger. And actually the guy that I put as my comp for him was Alex Tuck. I just think that size skill combo where you have that scoring ability is really solid. And so if he does play center, that's even better. But if he's a wing, I still think he provides value. And then the last guy that I'm kind of looking at in this range is Liam Ruck. And Liam Ruck was the second leading scorer in the WHL. His twin brother Marcus was the other guy, or was the leading scorer. So you have the two twins there. And Liam is incredibly intelligent, His motor runs well. He's average sized, a little bit light. He needs to get stronger, but pretty much all guys at this age do. But Liam Ruck has scoring ability. He's got playmaking ability. And then he also has that motor where he's a high compete player. That's one thing, too, where I just want to see a little more consistency of that motor in order for him to be a more effective player. I think that those are players that will be available in that range reasonably. There's a huge clump of players that could be options there. You can look at a number of the second tier defensemen as well. But those three guys, I think like one of those three will probably be there. And I think any of those three could be a fit.
So when you talk about Maddox Dagenais, you know, the skating is one thing. I remember his dad, yes, Pierre, you know, didn't have the skating at everything else. Does he have the skating? You talk about Alex Tuck. Alex Tuck, the one thing that separates him from other bigger guys is the skating. So does Maddox Dagenais have the skating?
Yeah, so I kind of call him Alex Tuck without the
without
feet,
the wheels.
If you will. Yeah. Which, so, you know, like he doesn't have that higher end skating ability. I do think that it's not a detrimental trait in his game. I don't think it's something that's going to hold him back from being an impactful player. It's just, you know, Tuck has that explosiveness, the ability to beat guys wide, those kinds of things. You don't see that as much in Maddox's game, but what you do see is I think he gets to the interior very well. I think he's able to make plays from all over the ice. He can score those dirty goals. And it's just a matter when he plays a physical game too, when he decides he wants to be mean, he can be pretty imposing on the ice too. So, and that's another guy where I just think as he continues to build strength, and you see right there just the release and the ability to find those holes, he is a really intriguing player. And like I said, with bigger players, I think it's, you know, it's harder to find those guys that have that soft touch skill that with that dexterity and all the different things that allow them to achieve at a high level and have that finish that he does. And that's why I'm really excited about the player.
With so many picks on the move, and we just talked about Buffalo moving from 27 to 20, but you've got St. Louis with three. Now Ottawa is currently sitting here with three first-rounders as
Can't
well.
Can't move the 32nd overall.
Correct.
Like, that one is in cement.
But when you see teams with so many picks and so much movement happening right now, do you view it as teams, like, wanting to move up and have more options to get certain guys, or do you really feel that everyone is just striving to have quote unquote better draft capital so they can make deals to help the current roster? And like, and so how does that affect when you're trying to put these lists together for mock drafts?
Yeah, it's always hard. I mean, I think the one thing I assume that Florida was never going to pick ninth. So I was like, whoever I'm putting ninth is just kind of whoever's there will get that player. So you make that decision early on. But like, I think when you, St. Louis is a great example. That's a team that has had multiple draft picks that they have used in draft. They've had three player first rounds in recent memory. They're not afraid to do it. What I think that draft capital allows you to do is it gives you a ton of options. The ability to trade up, the ability to trade back, the ability to package players for something more immediate help. It's, you know, as a GM, you find out whatever that value is, and then you get to the draft floor, that value can change in an instant because of a deal made here or a deal made there. And then you have to kind of adjust to that. So I think that any team that has multiple draft picks isn't going to be afraid to use them all at the draft. But I think you look at different teams and at some point, there is such a thing as too many prospects. You can't sign all the guys at the same time. You're not going to get all the best players. Some of them aren't going to work out. There's always going to be these different things. So I think having as many, you know, kind of magic beans, if you will, you know, one of them's going to sprout the beanstalk, you know? So like that's what you hope, I think, in a lot of cases. But yeah, I mean, the options available to general managers, especially now when it seems like player movement is a little bit more fluid at this point, you want to have those options available to you, because there are definitely teams now, like I think you look at, you know, Florida in particular, you know, what do they have left that they'd be willing to part with in order to make more moves if they were to choose to do that?
Exactly. Chris Peters from Flow Hockey with us as we get set for night one of the draft on Friday here in Buffalo.
So I like how you say about, you know, prospects are like, you know, planting something. And oh, I was planting some grass seed yesterday, and the rain today was
good
perfect.
Luck. So nice timing.
I planted a lot of it, hoping that it, you know, some of it take and fill out some bare spots. So that's the way it goes. You did mention the Florida Panthers. We've been talking about that trade that sent Brady Tkachuk from Ottawa to Florida and the return and all the picks.
Yep.
The last first-round pick the Florida Panthers had was Simiskovich that they traded to acquire a pick to trade away. They don't have a first-rounder. Well, they didn't have one in 2022, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. They won't pick in the first round that decade, right? So, but what else do they have to be able to trade if they want to go get a Hellebuck or something? Because they're going to have to trade prospects and hopefully like players on their roster when you consider that they're directly in line with what Buffalo's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing is, like, if you're looking at a Hellebuck situation there, like, what kind of package would that be? I mean, I would have to think that a solid roster player is coming back the other way, and is that like an Anton Lundell who basically was able to kind of fill the gap left by Alexander Barkov decently well. I mean, it's not the same player. It's nobody's Barkov, but you know, that's a player that has made a pretty significant impact on a Stanley Cup champion team. And so those are the kind of things you look at. When I look at their prospect system, there's just not a lot there that is going to be enticing enough to get some of those big players. They have guys that I like. Like, I think Sandis Milmanis is a very good player. That's a young guy that's kind of bounced between the AHL and the NHL, and he's starting to find his way a little bit. You know, he's an Olympian with Latvia. You know, he's a really solid player. They have other guys kind of further down their list, like Grayson Sachin and others that are highly skilled players that maybe create a little bit of value. But I think Sam Sketch was really one of their best bargaining chips because of the fact that there's still a lot of runway for Mackey to kind of figure out what he's going to be as a pro. And I think actually in a better, like in a system that doesn't have the depth that Florida does, he could potentially flourish. So I like that bet from Seattle as well. But yeah, I mean, it makes it really difficult, I think, for Florida to make other moves. But I also think that Bill Zito is going to find a way. And you look at the way that these teams are operating now, and you mentioned the lack of first-round draft picks. And I think, who's getting rewarded for that? Well, the teams that are not being too precious about their prospects sure seem to be, you know, where it's like we're saying, like, Vegas continues to go to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They trade their either they make their pick and they trade it, or they've traded the first round pick before they make the pick. I mean, and sure, they're, you know, you can go do revisionist history about the Nick Suzuki trade and whether or not that was the right thing. But that was their philosophy, is we're not going to be too precious about our prospects. We're going to get help now, and we're going to constantly be in a win now mode. And that's basically what they've been. So, you know, I think that these GMs are getting more and more aggressive. They're getting less precious with their prospects. And as a result, they're making these bigger moves, which is what you kind of like you have to do. You think about the Quinn Hughes trade, a lot of young assets going back, including a top prospect in Zeev Bouyum. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that you need. Florida's running out of those things, and they're going to have to probably pull from their current roster.
Right, they have to. And that's the thing. And whether you believe in significant value right now in no trade and no movement clauses, who's to say? Because players are pushing the envelope here, regardless of what the contract details tend to say.
Yes.
The only objection would be Bruce Cassidy, who seemed to be stuck by his contract as a coach. But the players, they don't seem to be having
players have the power.
The players have the power. And that's why if the Hellebuck deal was to happen, Lundell has to be the piece that Florida moved. He's the only one of all of them that doesn't have any protection, and he should be the biggest one that Winnipeg would want. But here's the thing.
Can you sell Evan Rodriguez as the key piece of that trade?
No, but he might have to fill in, and that's the thing. Like, this is such a dangerous slope for Winnipeg to be on. Like, what if they actually pulled off getting Lundell? They then don't have a goalie. You know what I mean? Like, you then don't have Hellebuck. And then what is Kyle Connor going to feel like moving forward without some of these pieces and the trickle down of making a massive trade like that? And since we're in this hypothetical world and Ottawa's got three first rounders now, and people want to link immediately, well, they could maybe try to give all three to Dallas for Jason Robertson.
Yeah,
but does Dallas really want to use the picks? They're in a win now window too, aren't they? So, like, Chris, how do you compartmentalize all that? Not to mention the north of the border, south of the border aspect, which seems to be a real thing right now in the NHL again.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like, you know, I think that the thing is that you can look at it a lot of different ways. And you know, whether or not Canadian teams are going to continue drafting players, I think if you're Winnipeg, you're in such a difficult position because they're kind of on their own thing. You're on everyone's no trade list. you will not sign many or most of the top free agents ever because they just don't want to go there. You have to win the draft. And they've won the draft a lot over the years and have built that way. And the fact they got as much time out of Connor Hellebuck, as much time as they've gotten out of Kyle Connor, you know, a lot of these guys, that is a good opportunity. But now you have to make sure, if you are going to trade those players, you're going to have to find assets that are going to be sticking around for a significant amount of time, which you really never know until they get there and you work through it. So that's a really difficult position for them to be in. I think the other thing that's happening too is like, okay, you know, Ottawa is losing Brady Tkachuk. They also did get, what, 7 or 8 years out of Brady Tkachuk? That's a pretty good run of time. Was it enough to get them to where they ultimately wanted to be? It was not. But you still got that amount of time, and now you're getting a pretty good collection. I agree with you, Duffer. There's no way, like, to me, that Dallas is really a realistic option. I don't think that they're in the draft capital building phase of their situation. I do think that the package of picks for Ottawa, there's a real necessity, because you still have Tim Stützle, you still have Jake Sanderson. You know, there is a window for you to remain competitive even without Brady Tkachuk, so you need to find ways to make that happen. But, you know, like, I think that the American players and the Canadian players and what have you, like, teams are definitely talking about that. Like, I shared this before and somewhere else where, you know, I was having a conversation. It was like a scout jokingly said, the Americans are the new Russians. There's the American factor now if you're a Canadian team. And I buy that, you know, like, I buy that to a certain extent. But like I said, you know, you have some control. Once you get that guy into your system, you have that, you know, the ELC structure and the RFA years and all those different things to kind of maintain control for about 7 years there. And you have to utilize that to the best of your ability, maximize that time and that window, and see where it goes from there. But man, it is getting tougher and tougher because players are exerting the control that they really don't have throughout most of their careers otherwise. Yeah. You think about, they're drafted into junior, they're drafted in the NHL. You know, the only time they really get a choose is if they are recruited into college and they can kind of go wherever they want. There's no draft, but now we're seeing these players try to exercise those rights, and I think that will only continue to happen as we get further and further down the road here.
100%. Chris, great insight as always. Can't wait to see your draft night coverage as well through Flows.
The headlines is going to be, Americans are the new Russians. That's the headline.
The American factor. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Peters from Flow Hockey. Great stuff, Chris. We'll see you soon. And, of course, Chris will be working in conjunction through Flow Hockey with The Athletic on draft night. We want you to look forward to group nights, like big groups at Sabres game coming up. You can save on box office pricing, get access to exclusive experiences like photos on center ice, post-game slap shots, Sabres access, and more. We're talking about groups of 10 or more. Visit Sabres.com/groups to learn more. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Busy Monday allows for 43 seconds or less of World Cup update from Marty.
Well, listen, the World Cup has been so much fun, but today is going to be a great day if you love the World Cup and soccer. You got Lionel Messi in Argentina play at 1 o'clock. You got Mbappe in France at 5 o'clock. And you got Holland and Norway tonight at 8 p.m. Those are three huge games for three huge superstars. It has been awesome. USA won their group, by the way. We didn't talk about it last week.
Wyndham Clark wasn't too popular in winning the U.S. Open.
No, they all wanted Burns to get the, you know,
win. I've never watched the end of a tournament where there were so few people cheering for the guy who was nailing it down wire to wire.
He would miss a putt, and they were cheering that he missed a putt because they wanted Burns to get there, have a playoff. And remember last year, Burns was the one that didn't get the relief from the wet ground and totally blew up in the final round.
Marlies blew up in the playoffs, won all five rounds, win the Calder Cup. Happy anniversary on this day to the Sabres for drafting Rasmus Dahlin. It was on this date in 2018 when they drafted their captain first overall. Yes. Happy birthday, Ilya Bryzgalov. He's 46.
I'm afraid of bears. Ilya Bryzgalov was a good goalie, but was a crazy personality off the ice. That's what people will remember him for.
Lucas Dostal's birthday as well with the Ducks.
Oh, this is
interesting. 26, so who's going to have the better career, Dostal or Bryzgalov?
I don't know. In career earnings, I would say Bryzgalov.
I think you're right on that one. I'm hopeful.
The universe is ginormous big.
Yeah. Well, who do you think's more afraid, Briz of bears or Knox of porcupines?
I would say Knox of porcupines right now, unless he's stupid enough to go back.
Don't poke the bear, Knox. That's yes. the moral of the story. Assistant GM of the Sabres, Jerry Fortin, leads us off on Sabres Live tomorrow.